session. Item eight, consider to take possible action regarding the retiree look-back project review of past incidents of unusual compensation increases at the end of employment. And Raleigh.
Good morning. We're just revisiting some of the themes from the Look Back Project, and just to remind everybody, the Look Back Project looked at retirees for the time frame 2004 2014. And at that time, the initial project was to look at increases or unusual increases between the pre-final average salary and final average salary for retirees during the period. After the meeting in December, under the direction of the board, we were asked to actually look at specific compensation items, differential items. And if you recall, at the back of the Look Back Project in the appendix, there was a list of differentials that, based on the initial look back, which focused on individuals that had a high increase in final average salary, 30% or more, a list of differentials was created illustrating the individual percentage changes for that group of 188 out of 3,881. So what I did is I went back, took a look at all the retirees, 3,881, and out of that, drew out those differentials and identified individuals that had high increases in that differential pre-FAST period to final average salary period. So that's what's contained in the memo. Now, just to put it a little bit more in perspective, of the 3,881, the individuals that we looked at, there were some individuals that, with their specific differentials, had high increases. There was also individuals that, on the majority, did not have high increases in those specific differentials. The differentials that we've already talked about a little bit this morning, those that are occupational based, things based on terms of service, longevity, educational items where by eligibility criteria through education, training, tenure, something specific to their occupation. Those differentials over time across the whole study group, the whole population, we didn't see the large increases. A lot of that's because once you attain that, the eligibility criteria, you receive the educational requirement, you attain one of the longevity milestones, you continue to receive that through the length of time. The only time where you actually might see a little bit of pop in what was observed was when somebody that was concurrent with their final average salary year, they decided to retire. Been here 15 years, I'm now at another milestone, I have all my credentialing, I've been receiving this for a long period of time, so maybe this is a good time for me to actually start thinking about retirement. So we'd see a little bit of that pop, for that last year, but not significantly. So what we were looking at were differentials that actually displayed themselves to actually show very high changes between their FAST and pre-FAST period. Now, the one thing that, if you recall, going back to December, the differentials that had large percentage changes tend to be variable in nature. So things like shift pay, shift pay was certainly one. We addressed the issues with on-call and callback. We'll be talking about that a little bit later this morning. But one of the things that, looking at shift pay, one in particular, the shift pay at 5%. Now, on the chart here, there was 158 retirees of the 3,881 that actually received that across the whole population over the 10-year period. Now, the 44 retirees that actually had increases over FAST over pre-FAST, there are three retirees that had increases over 30%. That still left 41 that actually had increases in between their pre-FAST and FAST period that are left that had increases. And you actually see the blue line and then the red line, which is actually the final average salary, that's actually the average of those individuals that had increases, okay? The green line is the average for everybody over the period that actually had that shift differential. So here we actually see, something that's very, very telling here. You've got, if this was one individual, we'd actually, if they're part of that group of 188 that had really, really high increases in final average salary. This is showing the behavior of the individuals that received this type of shift pay going into their final average salary year. So just saying it's one individual or, you know, a small group, you know, here you've got 44 individuals with three of those with an increase of over 30%. It's almost like a launching point. So, and then you look at the amount of payment for that, the pre-average salary versus what's occurring in the final average salary, it's actually a very, very large increase. So when I start to look at the variable compensation items and looking at the average of all retirees, again, this is the shift pay of 15%. You see where the average, almost like a flat line, there are 57 of the 3,881 that received this shift pay at 15%. 22 retirees that had an increase going into their final average salary over pre-FAS, and then 5 retirees with increases in excess of 30%.
Can I just clarify the line you're showing here where it's blue and then turns red? Is right. That for all 22 retirees?
That's correct.
Okay. So if we've got 5 of them that are significantly more and we only charted those 5, we would see those go way off the chart.
No, the chart is actually the 22. The 5 are included in there.
Yeah. Right, but I'm saying if we only charted the 5.
Oh, it would be much more significant.
Right.
Yeah.
Because the others are bringing the average down.
Right. And then, you know, just to put it in perspective, I wanted to see what was going on here. And in the data, when we extracted it, I even went out 36 months, okay? And what I wanted to actually find by doing that is to see if there's a little bit of a groupthink or a herd mentality or something like that. And because you have different retirement dates over the period, you have different you know, positions, classes, employers, and departments, you know, it was really hard to actually find some common, other than that they were receiving this kind of, this specific differential. So, you know, as a trending and tracking item, you know, this is something that, you know, the question would be when we walk, if the board would decide to walk into these individual retirement calculations, what was the common item that actually led to that behavior? How was that paid? What was the, you know, what's that missing element that actually causes it to look like this? And why that differential was paid in that? You know, I even looked at when certain bargaining items across the timeline, and that would be great because then you can take a specific date and say, okay, all of these people that were active started to receive this benefit because under MOU, they, you know, it was negotiated. So starting on that date, they would start to receive that. So if we look at the actives, you know, we'd see something like this. You would imagine if we actually pulled all that data in. These are retirees, different retirement dates across the whole 10-year period. So what is it that's actually causing that particular shift pay item to actually appear like that in their final average salary? So, you know, that's the question that, you know, if the board were to go and want to go to the next step, as per the direction in December, and walk into those retirement calculations, that we'd actually have to do that for these individuals and then, you know, collect additional evidence and that sort of thing. So again, just building on that.
Raleigh?
Just a quick question on that last one. As I drive, can you go back, that one, where you've got such a de minimis number mm-hmm. as the average for everybody,
right.
In order to get to that with some very high numbers, it strikes me that for most of the average, they're in pennies.
Right.
In order to offset it down to that kind of a, with the high ones, to offset it down to that kind of a number,
exactly.
You're really dealing with a very small number beyond the 5. Maybe there are 10, somewhere between 20 and 30, or 5 more, and all the rest are down to pennies, almost, of differential.
And that's very true. And just to reiterate, this one actually is the 22. If I just graph the 5, you'd actually see, you know, much higher
right.
delta, and it would be in potentially a little bit easier. But even with the 22, you know, that's still a significant change between their pre-final average salary period and the final average salary.
I would
period.
Agree.
It,
Is there a reason on this one that the first 4 months they didn't spike? On all the other graphs, they spike, you know, in month one of their final average salary.
Right, and that's one of the things that I was actually trying to point out in that in the first the beginning is why is that?
Yeah.
You know, and I was trying to look at specific employer groups. You know, is there a change where one differential is paid and then it converts to this? That's actually one of the areas that, as of today's meeting, I still haven't come to the answer. I think that's when we walk into each individual retirement calculation, and if we have to go back and collect, written evidence from, you know, the department, from payroll, and that sort of thing, go into that end of the project, we might uncover that answer.
Just for clarity, you say in 24 months preceding. Okay, so the whole span is 24 months.
That's correct.
Each dot is a month.
That's correct.
Okay, thanks. That's appreciated.
Just to clarify, this is only shift pay. There's no other factors.
No, it's just the payment of that differential, the individuals that received that differential.
Okay, and do we know if there was increased, people were increased on the shift? Let's say normally there was three. Something happened to double it, anything like that happened?
That would be one of the pieces that we'd actually have to go because, again, it's not just a single department. We'd actually have to go what their scheduling was. We've identified those individuals but in the data, but go back, look at their scheduling, look at records. You know, if that's something that the board would be willing to entertain and if that's the direction you want to go in, that can certainly be done. That could possibly provide, you know, some support as to why it occurred that way.
Now, were there any Ventura terminal pay things that could have had any effect on this?
At the beginning of the period, towards 2004, there may have been, but as far as the inclusion and most of these are actually post 2004. So by that time, most of the Ventura items had already been, termination had been made, things had been included already, certain things had been excluded at that point. So this is, 5 years almost post when the start of this in 2004. You know, there may have been some still things that, going back with specific employers that were still being, discussed, but, because the period is 2004 to 2014, it's already post Ventura by a number of years.
I guess my thing is, that I don't know how they work, but let's say in your last year, there's a terminal pay thing. Would that have some sort of effect on what we're looking at?
No, because a terminal pay is completely different. This is
okay.
Just the differential that was paid.
Thank you.
That's specific for that item.
Is SH7, does that?
I think you have to help introduce yourself up with the mic. Thank you.
Dan Bornstein, is SH7 associated with a specific group, a significant department, or each of these pay codes? Do they associate with a specific group of employees?
Well, that's one of the things that I was looking at why it would trend that way. And no, there's several departments that actually can pay that code through the employer. So that's one of the things that I was looking at.
And also for the other pay codes of the other...
That's correct.
So it's not necessarily one department particular
right.
For each
there
of
is one
department.
That we'll talk about a little bit later, which is specific to fire. But for the shift pay ones, they're paid through the entire employer. That's not one employer code.
Okay. Raleigh, help me understand one thing. I'm just trying to figure out the dollars and cents.
Sure.
Go back to the first slide. Okay, so you're saying that this person is receiving a shift pay of 5%,
right.
And that 5% is equal to about $140 a month more? Is that what it is? Than their pay?
About that, yeah.
Okay, so if you divide that, say 140, you divide that by 4 weeks. Okay, so they're making about $40 more a week with their differential.
Right.
Just okay.
Yeah.
Dollars and cents.
It's good to put it into that perspective.
Okay.
On some of these dollar amounts.
But these guys down here on the end. And we're looking at that maybe
50.
Two or three times that.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And
okay.
If you recall, going back to the Look Back Project in December, and one of the findings in that is, at times it's not one specific differential which might lead to that increase in final salary. It's the cumulative effect. So if you're actually able to drive a benefit here. And then you're receiving longevity. You are being paid additional shift pay. You have additional credentialing, so you get another. So you start having that stack.
You have three of them stacked up. You got more than $40.
Right, exactly.
You got 120 a week.
So what this is showing here, even with the high deltas between FAS and pre-FAS. You actually see the cumulative impact when it's actually integrated together with all those other differentials. So when you're looking at that, and as an employer, and when I'm looking at the employers and conducting those audits, this is actually one of the things that I'm looking at is how they're recording. Are they being consistent with their own internal policies, their scheduling, how they're actually allocating. It's based on hours for variable compensation components. Are they deploying that consistently across the people that are eligible to receive that compensation? Is there a specific group? Is it done by lot? Is it there a certain amount of arbitrariness? That sort of thing.
Okay.
So then, here we have something very unusual. So here, the green line again, this is BSHS shift pay. And just to give you an idea, here we had 165 of the 3,881 retirees. This is a shift pay at 5.25%. There are 9 retirees that actually had increases, over the FAS over pre-FAS, and then 4 retirees that had increases over 30%. So, again, because this is an average, I thought, how can this actually be happening? Why do we have this really weird, nosedive between the periods? And I was actually trying to find a connection of these 9 individuals, and I haven't, I haven't found that. It's really interesting. So, where is that coming from? Why is that behavior in the payment of that shift differential actually occurring for the period? And then, going back to Jerry's point, to put it in perspective, the dollar amounts, on average, are relatively small in comparison to what their actual final average salary is. The individuals that, the 9 individuals that actually received increases, for the final average salary, it does, it's much higher than what the average is. But at the same time, the impact as it's stacked in consideration with other differentials, would increase their final average salary over the whole.
Raleigh, this isn't a January to December 24 or 12 months, right? Do we know when that?
No, this is
blue and the red.
It's the months preceding their retirement date.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not a fiscal. It's not a month to month. It's literally a month count from their retirement date, going back 24 months.
24 months.
Because there have been issues as we get closer to a fiscal year break that overtime or shift or other dollars are not available for providing services or paying for services.
Right, and that's a good point, because that actually was something that I looked at, because predominantly our retirements do trend upwards as we go into March, because the May the April 1st coal payment, that sort of thing. So that is something to see. Could that possibly be skewing it? And that would be true. Across the 3,881, but when you look at the individual retirement dates, they weren't all falling in. If they all fell within the month of March, then there could be something else playing into that, but that wasn't the case.
Just a comment, though. If you throw out this aberrant thing here,
right?
which you, and you just drew those line there to connect those 2 months, what you see is that immediately preceding the retirement year and the year, it jumps up and stays up.
Right, exactly.
You don't know what that is, but but if you take that out, it's pretty significant behavior pattern.
Right, and you know, on a simple level, most people, when they start thinking about retirement, you know, you start doing some pre-planning, even in our literature, you know, even in the retirement planning industry, you know, you want to start thinking about, you know, 5 years, 3 years in advance of your retirement, you know, and that's for a planning standpoint. Are you planning income, you know, at that point? I guess that's the question. You know, that it's starting to occur in your pre-final average salary. Do you start looking around for additional income items to augment? Yeah, I guess that's the question for the board. You know, is that actually what may have occurred here? Yeah. The other one. So. The fire recall and standby. Now, on the whole, 39 individuals of the 3,881 received this. Okay. The average actually is pretty consistent. And even looking back at the 36-month, and you know, sort of curious, you know, going as far back as we can find, you know, it is pretty consistent across the board. There were three individuals that received the F67 standby differential. It was in excess of 30%, and you know, to the point of the impact of how that impacts their final average salary. Two of the three individuals had increases in their final average salary in excess of 40%.
So this was 3 out of 39.
That's correct. And then the other individual was below that.
Raleigh.
Yeah.
For this pay code, what's the job classification for these employees?
Looking at the there was a battalion captain,
battalion chief,
captain, and I believe the firefighter. I'm not sure if the paramedic was in there, but
this in Contra Costa County, no employee below the rank of battalion chief can receive recall and standby.
Okay.
So
it has to be a captain or lower?
It has to be a battalion chief, which is required to be on call for the county, because we only have a 3.3 battalion chiefs on duty for Contra Costa County Fire. And so those other battalion chiefs that are on call can come on when there's high load or a disaster or those type of things. So it's a tremendous advantage to the county, because now they don't have to pay all these battalion chiefs to actually be on duty. Mm-hmm. So with this final average salary payment, I feel like this is a little bit skewed. This makes it look like everybody's spiking mm-hmm. here. And the reason is because they get to select their final average salary period. Mm-hmm. So of course they're going to select this final average salary period that's the highest,
right,
or when they have the on-call pay, when they get promoted to battalion chief. And preceding that, of course, it's going to be lower. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I feel like this is skewing, and this is stereotyping. This battalion chiefs are the only ones that can have this pay cut.
Okay.
So,
and to your point, actually, two of them were battalion chiefs.
And the other ones?
The other one, I believe, was a captain, but I'll take a look at it. There were a number of individuals that received it. Now, yet they were all promoted to battalion chief. Do we have 39 battalion chiefs?
That have retired?
Yeah.
Sure. There could be 39 battalion chiefs that have retired.
Over that period?
Not a two-year period.
Over the last 5 years.
Over the last 10 years.
Ten years. Absolutely.
Ten years.
Could it easily be
10 years.
10 battalions, 39 battalion chiefs, I would say.
Well, you have more than just Con Fire. I mean, you got
right, San Ramon.
Yeah.
Moraga Rinda.
So just to put that in perspective, there's other departments. It was whoever received that code. Okay. So these particular individuals, the three that received that. And I'd have to actually look at that. Is it different between the MOU, who receives it in, you know, the other fire departments versus On Fire?
Yeah. Well, I take a little bit of offense for our industry that everyone starts laughing at this, when it's actually, my understanding, it's battalion chiefs and it's required of the position. And of course they're going to choose their highest final average salary period as SIRL allows.
Right.
So.
To that point, if they're going to choose that, why did it start suddenly?
What if
it's
they were
individuals? If it's an individual and they just started receiving it, I guess that's the question. If they're receiving it all through their career, or let's say for a period of time, and they go back and they choose that as their final salary period, why would you have that one?
Raleigh, would is there a period of time where there were a number of persons elevated or promoted to battalion chief, and it may have been their last?
Not that I was able to observe, okay. But again, going back to all the MOUs negotiated items over the 10-year period, that would be where that evidence would be found. Mm-hmm. That wasn't part of this particular exercise. Here we were just looking at the metrics. What actually occurred in each individual case, we'd actually have to go back and look at that. Look at the MOU that was in effect at that point in time when they retired. What was in effect in the preceding period, before their retirement date, and then when they actually moved into that position where they were eligible for that code.
Because it's odd to go from zero, those three go from zero to this amount. It's odd that there wasn't.
Perhaps they got promoted right before they retired.
That was my thought. That's
which typically happens with the battalion chiefs, especially with AB 197.
One of these is
a number of battalion chiefs departed mm-hmm. because of the retirement changes with the pending law and the court. So I mean, this we have to account for all those factors before we start laughing at a chart.
That's a fair
okay.
comment.
Okay,
I want that to go on record.
Because at the end of the day, we're still talking about people's compensation and how they're actually supporting their retirement. What we're looking at here is strictly, an objective what the metrics are actually showing us. Do numbers actually indicate behavior? No. Could we deduce things only with additional anecdotal evidence? Could we actually say, this is why this occurred? All I'm showing the board is there's an anomaly that's occurring.
The trend.
Between these two periods in the 24-month preceding retirement.
Additionally, and I can't speak for the battalion chiefs, but I know that the general local 1230 firefighters took a significant pay reduction. And that all corresponded with AB 197 and going to the court. So if the battalion chiefs also took, and I can't speak for them, if they took a pay reduction, which I think they did, that you would see a significant where they're butting up right to the point where they have this higher pay, and then they get promoted, and then maybe they're only for a year or something, and then there's a whole list of factors that can play into this.
So, I'm sorry.
I was going to interject. We had a study we did a while back was lieutenant. So she got promoted. So that was her last year from sergeant lieutenant. She got her terminal pay. That was 16%. She got her longevity, which is another 5%. And we kind of did the same, like, oh, my God, this is a bad example. Somebody's using it. But then you drilled down. You found that it was all legitimate. So I don't think right now we all kind of at that point saying there's probably legitimate reasons, maybe not. And this is kind of like, I believe, just the overall.
And, going back, I'm making observations, to the board, showing some metrics and trending and trending analysis based on that particular code.
The thing.
This is something that the board is going to look at a little bit closer and gather that additional information to actually provide, rationale as to why those things are occurring. Going back to the original memo that was decided in December, that would be one of the things that we look at. And one of the items in the December decision was to actually, if need be, bring those individuals in, submit additional supporting evidence why certain things occurred.
I just have a question. I'm trying to wrap my head around who we're looking at here. So this 3881, that's the county and all districts?
That is everybody that retired within CICERA during the 10-year period.
Okay, but then on these charts, you're referencing specific pay codes,
that's
which
right.
are unfamiliar to me, so I'm assuming are county codes?
Most of these are county codes.
That's so right. when Actually, there was a question whether this was Contra Costa or one of the other agencies. This is specifically Contra
like
Costa.
Like Central San or somebody?
Well, yeah. No, well, we don't have firefighters. But no, the code that made me think about it is this SH2 shift pay at 5%. We have a swing shift at 5%, but that's not our pay code.
Right.
So are you lumping all 5% in here, or are you just pulling the county?
It's in our pension administration system, the individuals that receive that specific pay code.
Got it. Thank you.
But on this chart, right, this is not necessarily just CONFIRE.
It's whoever in our system had received and was coded with that.
And it could be that Moraga or San Ramon also use that same code.
To a certain degree, if it was mapped, based on what they were transmitting to us, yes.
Okay.
And this one,
this one is
somewhat unusual. So, you know, just to put this in perspective. This is the bonus FNP, and this is a family nurse practitioner weekend. Signed this code, and I was sort of curious about this because when this showed up, I was more interested in the dollar amount change. But there is a little bit of trending, if you can make it out. It's a little bit easier in the memo chart because it doesn't have the trend line. But even with the trend line, with the average, the green line, it shows the variable nature of the payment of that particular differential, even across all of the individuals that had received it over the period of their final 24 months. Now again, weekend shifts, availability, scheduling, it has an impact on this. But three of the retirees that actually had this had an increase of 30% over the period. So that would be something that actually popped on our screen, looking at individuals that actually.
And again, the total is 14, so 3 out of 14.
3 out of the 14. The green line is the 14.
Okay.
So. One of the things that the board, should they want to consider is, based on the variable nature of the differentials, the variable differentials versus the ones that are fixed, longevity, education, that sort of thing, when you want to go further to actually look into each of the impact of these variable differentials into the retirement calculations, that's something that if you want to go a little bit deeper, start looking at this even closer to the individual level, I guess that would be what would be for the board today, how much further we actually move to this look-back project.
Yeah, I think the blessing and the curse of having this kind of information is that it raises more questions than it answers. And so I feel that we're duty-bound to gather additional information, to drill down further, to try and find out what some of the patterns might be, if there are any patterns, because these are data points, interesting data points, but not conclusive. And so it seems to me we ought to be considering looking further.
I have the same reaction. I mean, if for no other reason, to bring clarity to it, to resolve some of the issues that were identified, so we know or don't know, and the idea is we're going to learn from it. That's the point.
Will.
Rally, are any of these breaking the law or going against Searle's policies or anything?
No, to the point that I've seen, not having the benefit of actually going into the other supporting evidence, payroll records, that sort of thing, I can't draw a conclusion or make a determination or a finding that at this point. Again, we're just looking at the metrics and how they presented when we actually pulled it out of the system.
Well, and certainly from my perspective, I'd love to see us drill down a little bit deeper. As an employer, I think it's very helpful for us because we get to negotiate, oversee policies. And if we are seeing an unusual trend or unusual, I don't want to use the term necessarily spiking, but if we're seeing that happening, I want to make sure that we're addressing appropriately as an employer. So for me, the more information I have, and again, to clear up, if it's completely legitimate, great, but I want to make sure we have a full picture. So I would love to see us go a little bit, at least one more layer to find out what's really there.
Deborah?
I think it's important to drill down into these instances for the benefit of both sides, for us to know whether inappropriate things occurred, and on the flip side, if nothing inappropriate occurred, for us to report that to the public and say, look, we did a good job of looking into this, and we don't really see that anything was wrong here.
I agree with that. It's fair.
Raleigh, for me, the focus is the excessive. And I think you've done a wonderful job of going back 10 years, looking at 3,881 people, and coming up with 188 that you thought there. And again, it doesn't mean there is or there isn't something wrong with the way their calculations were done. But saying this might be something we might want to look further into, and I'm not opposed to that. I also like the idea of somebody, I mean, especially the 30% the number that you've been throwing out, I think is a clear thing that we ought to look at. And they may be legal. They may have done what is, you know, right to do. But it still raises a question, as a board member, it raises a question mark. And I never knew that this was going the way it was until this study came out. You did the first study, and I was somewhat surprised at how many of our retirees had increased their salary by as much as they had. So for me, I'd like to stay focused on where the direction you seem to be going, and I would like to dig deeper and look at it and just make sure that they were legal or they weren't legal differentials and calculated.
So can we do like a post and pre? Is it AB197 that kind of stopped the trip? The legacy members? That's the right one? Which bill was it? I get the 348.
AB 197.
Is there a way to do maybe a pre and post? Because we'll be ones pre-197 that are legit. Mm-hmm. And then I think there should be a lot less or more.
Wouldn't the pick shift the first?
Different distinction after AB 197.
Yeah, and that's an easy date. To a certain point, the point when the legislation was passed, or to the point after the related litigation and findings based on that, because you're going to have people that retired before the legislation was passed because they didn't know what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. People that retired within that brief period before it was, you know, effective, and then there was that long period that we were under the stay, where you could have people going either way. So just for clarity, which segment you'd like to use as the hard point.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but didn't you say you started from what, like January of last year, or was it? You went back 10 years, but what was the
end point?
2014 back?
Right.
Thank you. I couldn't remember. I know I read it.
So I'm sorry, guys. Yeah, as far as our hard point, because you know, depending on which date, you know, you would like to cut that off, where somebody may have perceived that they were, or we interpret that they were subject to, would it be the date that the legislation became effective, the date that?
I think the date where Judge Flynn gave the cutoff date.
Well, can you do both? I mean, to Gabe's question, you could do pre-January 1, 2013, but you could also plot the data for January 2, 2013 to the dissolving of the stay, right? Just if you're really going to get granular and look at the types of effects you might see, I think you could do that, right? I mean, that's okay. That might be helpful just because I agree with Gabe. It'd be nice to have some points, you know, some bookends to reference.
Harvey, then John.
Oh, I was just going to say, AB 197 didn't affect the pensionability of shift differentials, for example, so it wouldn't. It would be kind of irrelevant to this analysis.
I guess my point is, if we go forward, we're taking other pay codes, other things to look it up.
That were affected, absolutely. What's more interesting to me goes back to our other agenda item, which is. Looking at these charts, can you really treat these shift differentials, even if you were going to include them, are they really regular and recurring during careers? These charts belie calling these kind of differentials regular and recurring, even if you wanted to go down that route.
Plus, you have to have it be required of all the people in that classification. You've got an average that runs up here, and you've got people sitting at zero for so long. Yeah.
But the average, maybe I misunderstood, the average is the average of people who retire,
right,
including
the
these items.
Right, people who that receive that differential.
It's not the people who are still working that over that period of time.
There's no active data in the LIFAC, right?
Riley, I'm in a personal way, sort of wrestling with what's so wrong about people taking advantage of shift differentials in their final year. Maybe that's inappropriate. One of the spiking issues that I recall being getting lots of publicity was friendship promotions. Does any of your work attempt to identify people being promoted in that last year?
The data that I had access to for the look-back project does not provide those data points. So again, that's where another part beyond the metrics that we're able to pull from our pension administration system, we'd actually do potentially record requests, payment records, we'd be looking at schedules.
You're going to figure that one out.
Going back and forth.
Really think
so forth. So one of the things that the board would want to look at or discuss is how far and what types of records do they feel that I should be asking for from the individual employers as I get down to the individual level.
To the extent that, at least from my perspective, that's clearly identifiable, and I recognize immediately it probably isn't clearly identifiable in those cases. That's clear spiking. That's clearly something that I would not want to see us pay a pension on. Where I say the shift differential issue, to me, is much easier.
So the original look-back project did identify people that received increases in base pay and due to promotion. So we did have that data. I mean, we didn't look at why they're promoted, right? But what he has today is just these variable differentials. So there's nothing in there about increasing the base pay. But we did identify people that had large salary increases due to promotion.
Okay. But so far, we're not looking at anything that identifies some grouping that, in fact, benefited from a significant promotion just preceding retirement.
We did look at that.
Yeah, there was in the original look-back project, there were a couple of individuals that had been promoted into temporary positions or going into the final average salary. The evidence that we looked at included documentation that was included in the retirement calculation file. In there was communications back and forth between Cicera and the auditor controller, which indicated that the temporary upgrade or that promotion into probationary period, whatever the cause was satisfactory, met that, and they retired out of that additional pay grade. To my recollection, there was only two that we found, that was specific to that, across the whole 3,881. Again, the 188 were the ones that had very large final average salary increases over pre-FAST. For the others outside of the 188, we didn't go that deep into the individual retirement file to look at all the factors that contributed and the things that were reviewed for their final average salary.
So the two might have been within the 188 and may not have been. They're really independent
they,
over
they
here.
They were within the 188.
And you were, they are within the 188.
Right.
And you became comfortable in your analysis that it was not a spiking event in looking at their files.
Based on the information that was provided to me and the direction that I was given, it was not within the scope of the look-back project to make that individual determination that was made by the retirement system and the auditor controller at that time. If the board wished to review and actually go back and revisit that, the board is certainly at will to do that.
Okay, thank you. Deborah?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point you bring up, and I want to just for clarity state that we're talking about people who had a 30% or more increase in that final average salary year. That's huge. It's almost one-third more than they earned before the FAS. So I would actually be interested in adding those two to the ones that you research and look at things like had they been talking with Cicera about retirement prior to the promotion into this temporary position.
For clarity, for instance, when they actually had approached Acero to do a retirement estimate, for instance.
Right. Right.
So Raleigh, do you think you have enough information or a sense of direction from the comments you've received to carry on and do a more granular view, or do you need specific direction? Because it wasn't a specific sort of recommendation that I saw, so I just want to make sure you have what you think you need. If not, what would it be? And one of us can try to say it.
Well, actually, just to recapitulate, so the variable compensation elements, I think, so we'll look at a little further, deeper. To Kieran and Hugh's point, the promotion temporary effort, to see if there's any other instance across the whole population of that occurring. And then also to see if there's any correlation between an individual receiving a higher specific differential payment based on when they actually do a retirement estimate request, or are you just looking at an increase in their final average salary? So here I'm looking at the individual differential codes, which addresses, going back to the December meeting, those other people, all those others that may not have had a significant change in final average salary, but based on the appendix that was in the look-back report, had high changes in that specific differential going into their final average salary. So I think that's where I'm at.
I think there may need to be a clarification about whether the board would like to proceed and focus Raleigh's attention on the 188 individuals that were previously identified as having an increase of 30% or more.
Yes.
Or go beyond that to some other subgroup that is above 188 but somewhere below 3,881, where, like Raleigh said, he would be focusing on each pay code individually and seeing if that shows a 30% or more increase in the FAS period.
So we're going to look at both whether there's a trend with the pay code plus whether there's a trend with the employee. So there's two different analyses here.
Is that no, the question is the focus that he's presenting today is on the pay code itself and for each individual and the increase. The 188 number, that was a result of applying this 30%
threshold
and above
threshold.
Right.
Yes.
In the FAS.
Right. Because I'm interested in knowing whether there are certain codes that have a tendency to be abused more often than others. That would be interesting to see if that does come out. But also, we want to get down to the fact whether or not there are people who actually took advantage of those codes, abusing that advantage, I guess, to spike the last year.
The four graphs that you showed us here today, those the four worst pay codes that you found in the data?
That's correct. In the variable compensation items, at the end of the memo, there was a little bit longer list, which had others that had, increases, but not to the significant degree of the four that were illustrated in the memo. There are other variable compensation elements that are part of our data set that are transmitted by the employers. The data that we've seen, these were the ones that I saw had the highest, as far as fast and pretty fast changes. However, if the board wanted to draw a line as to a percentage change or something, or what they wanted to look at as far as a low watermark for me to look at, I can do that.
Based on the knowledge we have and the knowledge we know we do not have, respectfully, wouldn't it be better to say that these are the four most noteworthy pay codes as opposed to characterize them as the worst? The worst seems to carry a little bit of a...
To me, I think it would be good to use employer. I know in the sheriff's office, I cannot think of anything you could do to increase your last year's salary that dramatically. So I would think it'd be good also to know by employer where these are coming from.
Okay.
And just for Raleigh's purpose, maybe a little clarification on, do you just want to include these pay codes or some of the other items that he's brought forth, like in his December presentation.
I'd say anything
for me,
that.
That's fine, but for me, it's not the pay codes. It's those. It doesn't matter which pay code they use, but those that have increased their salary by 30% or more, I'm fine with. Let's look at it and go in deeper on it, and then come back. And if we find something, then having to take action on it and how to take action on it, all that would be discussed and we'd go forward. But there again, I think there'll be people in that 30% that had made a legal representation of themselves and it was legal. But I think where you started with, the cutoff at 30% is fine. And so for me, the question about where is I think the 30% threshold is where we should go. You know, who knows what might happen 6 months later, but the 30% threshold is where I think we should go.
I guess the question was, is the threshold 30% overall, or is it 30% of a particular pay code? Is that
overall?
So the overall is the 188.
Correct.
Right.
But within the three...
And it could be multiple pay codes creating
30%.
That's
right.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Because you're only looking at the baseline...
Just by way of example, the individuals that received the B-31 weren't part of the 188. So that's the weekend round, practitioners' weekend rounds. They weren't part of the 188. So just put it in perspective. But they had a very large increase in the payment of that.
I'm sorry, Rob, I can't hear you. What did you say?
Oh, sorry. The ones that received the weekend round differential were not part of the 188 that had an increase
but
in
that
final
was,
average salary in excess of 30%.
Wasn't that a separate issue? Wasn't that the on-call? Wasn't that a separate issue? Wasn't
that? No, the weekend rounds is completely different.
It's different. Okay, it's not the on-call.
Okay, so we're in the tunnel, Raleigh, and you got the flashlight,
you got the light,
right?
Lead us.
We need to get out of the tunnel now. So tell me what would be relevant or important from the December report that we haven't talked about here that might bear on the question of where we go.
Well, I think three things that actually came out of the meeting today was the first is actually identifying employer groups that, for one reason or another, to see if there's a connection between a specific differential being paid, those individuals that received it that had a very high payment, and then the second part is, did they have a large increase in final average salary?
Did they what?
Have a large increase in final average salary, and do that by employer, because that identifies groups. Because that actually leads into the second part where we're like, why do we have the charts looking this way, which is the additional information that would be needed that would provide that explanation. So you know, it could be when they submitted a retirement estimate. It could be something for that specific employer. Could there have been something that was going on with that employer that is not readily available, something negotiated, something for a particular group, something anecdotally that may have occurred that may be revealed by some other piece of evidence. Those would be items that I'd like to look at.
Dan?
Dan Bornstein. I just wanted to sort of come back to the point from the last time, which is I'm still a little perplexed as to why the 30% is so sacrosanct. It still strikes me as an awful high threshold. Why you wouldn't be looking further down? I mean, realize that's a board direction, but I guess that's a comment for the board as well. The other question I was wondering about too is there have been two other groups of last year raises that have been discussed here that I've written about, and I'm wondering if you've charted in the same way, and that would be the hazardous waste folks and the doctors. And I wonder if you've done a similar sort of chart to look at, I think I know what it looks like, but I wonder if you've done that.
Well, I think, December meeting, if you recall, our deputy CEO actually presented a memo related directly to those items, which actually preceded my presentation on the look back project. Actually, he presented But he looked at those specific codes, and in the memo that I just distributed, that was actually the first day, because I wanted to focus on others, because we're already discussing and deliberating the on-call differential code issue and the callback call issue. So as far as the trending and tracking analysis, individuals that may have received that in an earlier period, you know, would have actually been uncovered during the data extract that was done, and because those codes were actually called out, you know, for.
I was just wondering what it would look like graphically.
Oh, I think yeah. There were some charts that actually related to that in the December memo. I didn't include them here.
Sorry.
Oh, no, that's okay.
I seem to recall we said 30%, but wouldn't say later on we couldn't lower that, but I think that was for, like, our first shot at it.
Yeah, and yeah. I think with what you, the direction that you're providing now, that's as far as sure. Looking at the individual differential codes, looking
1%.
At the individual direct differential codes, because of the look-back project, I can actually tie that code to that individual and see what their increase in final average salary is. So, you know, I can provide those metrics, and then depending on what's found in that, the board can actually decide, is this an individual that we want to look at further? Now, they might be at 2%, 5%, they could be at 15%, whatever it comes that receive the differential.
Yeah, I think to know, I mean, we're asking for a threshold of 30, but there's people that are at 40 and 50 that you are going to look at too, right?
Certainly.
Of the 188, how many have you looked at and you saw no anomalies in, like, ad pays or things that, you know, specialty pay, but it was only related to leave cash out and terminal pay?
Two of the three individuals that received the fire standby pay had other compensation items that were included that would warrant some additional.
But of the 188, none of them were just raised because they did two vacation sales and then sold, you know?
I think that's actually in the December memo.
Yeah.
The chart says how many are just from terminal pay, how many are just from base pay, how many of them have other differentials.
Okay. I'll look that up. Thank you.
Yeah. For, just to give an example, going back to the December memo, a certificate for hazardous materials, for instance, just pick one here, the average differential increase in pay for that differential was 9%, right? And that was part of the 188. For vacation pay, let's just see here, just to give you an idea. Okay, here we go. For vacations, just using VO1, within the 188 individuals that received that, that differential, it was a 158% increase, which would reflect, you know, 1 year's accrual plus, you know, the additional sale. So that'll give you an idea. And that's actually contained in the appendix of the look back report from December. There's a schedule of other differentials that were found within the 188 that had increases at that point.
Carol?
The December decision by the board was to proceed on all the items that were presented. There was no limitation of looking at 30% or more only. So there was no limitation to only look at the 188 individuals. If that is what the board wishes to do now, I suggest that is done via a motion. The other alternative that Raleigh presented today is, instead of focusing on the 188 individuals, focusing on all individuals who had a per pay code increase of 30% or more, which will lead to a number that is higher than 188. So whichever option the board would like to go with in terms of directing Raleigh to continue to analyze the data and ask for information is fine, but I think that a motion is needed.
My question to you, what can you handle?
Well, it's just a question of extracting the data. It's the other part with all the differentials that are in there, depending on where the line is drawn and how many actually appear themselves across the 3,881. If I'm to collect additional evidence, schedules, pay records, that sort of thing, to actually drill in why a certain code has a certain behavior, then that will take some time. As far as the resources, I'm not sure that in HIS we have that. If it should present itself that we start going into hundreds, like 500 individuals across a number of pay codes, that becomes a large endeavor. Well, not saying that could not be done, but it would take some planning and some time.
I was going to reiterate, I think we sort of chose a number you could handle right now, and then later we can go. I think that's what's manageable for you and your department.
What I remember us discussing is the 188 were the ones we were going to drill into, and then based on what we found from those 188, if most of them seem to be, these are just normal anomalies and everything, was fine, that we would sort of let, the 188 is a sample, and that we find what we find out of that 188, and then if we do find that a particular pay code, as you've shown us here, there are a couple of them that seem to be more than one person, that we could expand into that pay code if it seemed like that was a trend that happened with that particular pay code. So I guess my question is, have we actually gone through the whole 188 and looked at why they're pensions were 30% or more than their FAS?
To a certain degree, the ones that actually presented themselves, the review for specific individuals is actually some of them are being covered under the on-call and callback issue. As far as the terminal pay, there's others that are being reviewed by staff going forward, and determinations will be made as to ultimately what would be includable or if pension correction is needed. And then for the others with the variable pay codes, that's one of the things that in connection with the others, we're looking at. As far as the specific individuals that had very, very high increase in final average salaries, we haven't gotten to the point where we would actually notify and discuss with those individuals. However, that is something that you had indicated in the December memo and the December decision, that should we get to that point, we come back to the board with those individuals, and then a framework for that forum for those individuals to present, should we go down that road, will be discussed.
How many of those individuals do you think there are out of the 188 where you might be coming back to us saying, this one really doesn't look right?
At this time...
ballpark, yes. That's a tough one.
At this time, there's 10 individuals of the 188 that I'm aware of that actually I'm looking at. That 5%. We're on the very, very high side.
Okay.
As far as the system, the other staff can actually speak to that.
All right. Eric?
Another possible alternative is to focus on certain pay types and prioritize those and deal with a particular pay type or particular pay types that the board feels should be prioritized. And you've seen different ones. You've seen here today, you've seen shift differentials. In December, you saw on-call and a few others that I can't recall right now. But you'll likely be hearing the same evidence about the pay codes if it's within the same department. You'll likely be hearing from the same department head and the same employees about the circumstances under which the pay item was paid. So that might be another logical way to parse this out.
This is one, I'm having a reaction. This is an observation of that a little more structure to this conversation is necessary in the form of either specific recommendations or option A, B, C, and D in writing so that we can digest it and think about it. I realize you can't always predict what the Q&A is and where it goes, but you know what the report says, and that maybe it yields a certain choice set for how you might proceed to do A, B, or C. And I'm just feeling like that now there's some smoke in the tunnel because now the light's not getting through the smoke. So I'm thinking maybe we want to have it brought back with a more discrete choice set. I'm not trying to kick this can, but I'm feeling that there are myriad choices here, and I'm not sure one is going to be excluding another or would include another just based on what we've heard today. So I need something, for me anyway, I need something a little more concrete.
I was real surprised to hear you say there may be an individual pay code that somebody may have increased their final average salary by more than 30% with one pay code.
Right, that's the shift differential. That's the report.
And I was under the impression that that would have been included in your study that indicated 188 people.
Right, there was one individual, if you recall, that received a differential payment that they were seconded to a state project. They chose an alternate final average salary year to capture that, and it more than increased their final average salary by in excess of 40%.
Okay, so
it was very isolated.
So you're saying there's one specific case. You're raising a question that says more than one case. You're raising a question that says there may be 20, 30 people out there on a different pay code. Which is it?
I think Raleigh stated that the report today of the shift differentials shows you retirements, correct me if I'm wrong, that are not included in the 188 group. Right?
There's
is that
one.
Right?
Repeat that again, please, Karen.
Yeah.
The what was presented today were individuals that received that specific pay code. Out of all of the 3,881, the ones identified on the subsequent charts with the trend line, I did indicate if there were those individuals that were had received increases in that pay code in excess of 30%.
Yes.
The individuals that of the 188 that were the ones that had increases in final average salary over 30%, the differential makeup would have been included in all of the 3,881. And if they had received that specific pay code, they would have received it. Again, not to focus on that one differential, but two of the three individuals that received the F-61 fire standby did have very large increases in final average salary attributed to a number of different individuals.
So let me say that. I still say let's do the 30% threshold. Let's look at the two people that you are talking about. Let's not clutter the waters with making you go do a dozen other pay codes individually and monopolize the time of our staff. I mean, it seems clear to me that there's a threshold that is out there, and we can always come back if there's something more atrocious that we find. But for now, I'm saying so. I'm going to make the motion that we look at the 30% threshold with the caveat that we look at the, is it one or two people that you were talking as well, and that you dig into that deeper and then come back with information and educate us more on the issue and then have the board be ready to make some kind of direction or decision at that time. But that's the motion I'm going to make.
So, Jared, your motion is those with a 30% FAS increase in the aggregate.
Yeah, the 188 plus the 188 people right. Plus the two.
Which
well, the two?
Two
are in there.
Two are in the
okay, well then, that's what my motion is. Then
I'd like to amend that motion. I think I'm okay. I'm if I'm understanding you correctly. You're saying we're going to pursue down the lines that we've directed in the past, which is research the 188 people. And
yes.
Okay, so I'm good with that, but I'd like to amend that to add in the people that we discussed. I guess there were two other people that fell outside the 188 that were promotion related.
From today's discussion?
Temporary promotion related.
Right, the temporary promotions, again, when I looked at, they would have been included in the 188 because that goes back
okay.
to the original look back.
So they're already included.
Okay.
Right.
So I'm prepared to second the motion, but I would, you know, down the road, I'm not going to change.
Don't tell me I'm going to make a motion and you're going to second.
I'm
going to
second. The motion. But down the road.
I mean, the one yeah. split a half an hour ago.
This is like twice in 1 month, Jerry.
Oh my God. All right.
Issue of pressure.
But down the road, I just want to make the comment that that doesn't preclude us from down the road saying, okay, out of these 188 people that we researched, we found this additional trend in this particular department or this particular pay code that we can then start to, you know, report to an employer and say, this is where we really think the problems are. And the employer can actually deal. Again, we get back to things the employer needs to handle.
No problem.
So I'll second the motion.
Okay. Any other comments, public or by the board? All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
One abstain.
One abstention. Scott abstention. Motion carries. Okay.